The question tonight is this: is your family alive? And John, Christ says that His purpose is to give us life in its fullest. And we as parents want to train up our young people with this life. We want to show them the way. We want to help them understand it. We want them to adopt it. And we want it to be a permanent part of their lives. And yet, in many of our Christian homes, this is not in evidence. Sometimes we see seemingly strong, spiritually strong young people easily misled by their peer group, getting involved in all kinds of problems. You and I know young people who go away to college, who leave Christians and come home seemingly throwing away the values that you've tried to teach them. Recently I was talking to a retired Navy chaplain, and he said, "Dell, one of the things that really struck me about my work in the Navy was the high mortality rate among young Christian men who come into the service and seemingly do a turnabout very quickly and throw over the values and the spiritual beliefs that their parents have tried to teach them." The question I think each one of us has to ask ourselves tonight is this: how can we make Christ a truly living and vital part of our families and of our children and of us as parents? Spiritual values, as I see it, are a product of a number of things. I know they're not a product of morals. Most of us have a pretty high standard of morals. We don't drink, smoke, chew. We don't commit crimes. We live by the law of the land. And we view ourselves as pretty moral. But I'll tell you right now that teaching your children morality is important. But if you're talking about teaching them spiritual values that they're going to live their lives by, morality is not the key. There's things that are more important. First of all, your spiritual example is important. And being a moral person has very little to do, really, with your spiritual value. Again, it's important to be moral. But your spiritual example consists of some other things that your children are looking at, that your young people are looking at. The first thing they look at in your example is this: what is at the center of your life? What's at the center of your life? What's most important to you? As Christian parents, we say the most important thing in life is Christ. And we tell our young people that, and we take them to Sunday school so they can hear that. And yet you and I know many times there's other things that are really at the center of our life. It could be making money. It could be that, and I don't know how you can avoid communicating that to a young person if you, as a father or mother, spend most of your waking hours working and trying to earn a living and get ahead. There's nothing wrong with getting ahead and earning a good living. But if your whole life is devoted to that, to the negligence of church and your own private life at home, then you're communicating to your children one thing with your words and another thing with your life. In some of our homes, the children are the center of our lives. The whole family evolves and revolves around the children. And we're saying to them, Christ is the most important thing in life. And yet they know that the major concern in our lives are the children, not Christ. Some of us have experienced emotional problems. And sometimes these problems preoccupy our thinking. And our children know this. They can see the concern and the anxiety that's on our faces all day long. And when you say to them, Christ should be the center of your life, and they see your problems being the center of your life, they're getting a double message. So you want to stop and consider whether you're truly showing your children that Christ is the most important thing in life, or is it other things? The second thing they look at in your spiritual example has to do with your ability to integrate spiritual things into your life. There's spiritual segregation in our homes today. Jimmy came in to see me the other day. She's a young Christian. And she said, "Dr. Jones, I'm confused." She says, "My Christian friends, my new Christian friends, are very willing to talk about Christian things at church and in the Sunday school class and in the Bible study. But when we go out in the evening to go bowling or we go out for coffee just to socialize, they don't seem to be very interested in talking about that sort of thing." And you know, I thought about that, and I thought about my home at some times, and I thought about some of the other homes that I'm acquainted with, and I came to the conclusion that's really the way it is in a lot of our homes. We're very interested in talking about spiritual things to our children when we have devotions with them, or at church, or perhaps at grace at the table. But when we're on vacation, when we're working in the yard with them, when we're relaxing with them, many times we show no interest or no inclination toward talking about or being willing to talk about spiritual things. We need to be willing to spontaneously, at any time, enter into a conversation about spiritual things with our kids. A little girl crawled up on her grandfather's lap and said, "Granddad, were you on the ark, on Noah's ark?" And he looked at her and said, "No, I wasn't." And she said, "Well, why didn't you drown?" And kids, they come up with these little questions and spontaneous comments and so forth. And that was an excellent opportunity for that grandfather to talk to that little girl about some very important spiritual truths. And yet I find that many times we as parents have all kinds of openings like that, but because we're just not in the mood, or our frame of reference isn't geared in that direction, or we're thinking about something else, we let it slip by and we say to ourselves, "Well, we'll handle it at devotional time tonight." And to me, that communicates to our kids that spirituality is kind of a compartmentalized area of our lives. It's something we talk about at devotions, or it's something we talk about at church, but it's something that really doesn't have a meaningful part of everyday life. And so I think we need to take the time to integrate our spirituality into every possible part of our lives. And I'm not talking about having a continual devotional period at your home 24 hours a day. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about rapping with your kids about how you feel spiritually and about where they're at spiritually, and doing it spontaneously. The third part of your spiritual example has to do with your attitude toward women. Or toward women. That sounds like a Freudian slip, doesn't it? Toward people, men and women. How do I get out of that one? I'm going to get it when I get home tonight. Has to do with your attitude toward people. Sunday night, those of you that were here heard me share with this area of what a Christian is all about and what a Christian family is about. And the point we were trying to make was really the mark of a Christian has to do with your ability to love your brother, to love other people. But I'm afraid that some of us, even though we're Christians, have a real hard time liking people. We just don't like people. We communicate to our kids that people are no good. You can't trust them. It's a dog-eat-dog world. Look out, they're going to take advantage of you. You've got to take advantage of them before they take advantage of you. And sometimes the people we like the least are the people that are at church. And we're continually criticizing the people in our Sunday school class, the board of elders, the pastor. And we're saying on the one hand to our kids, love your neighbor, love your brother. This is the mark of a Christian. But we're communicating something very different in our attitude toward people. And I think we need to take a hard look at our attitudes toward people. I don't care how miserably people have treated you. I don't care how badly life has been to you. You have a responsibility to love people, the Christian and the non-Christian. And you need to ask yourself, am I communicating that to my children? Or is the dialogue that exists in our home one of criticalness, bad-mouthing, distrust in relation to other people? Your spiritual example is really crucial. And without that example, your kids are not going to buy in to the spiritual values that you're trying to teach them. Now, not only is your example important, but your philosophy of teaching these values is important. Some of us act as if laws teach and instill values in people. That simply presenting a law to a child or a young person will automatically result in him adopting that value and living by that law. And I hear parents saying, do this simply because that's the rule. Or do this because that's what God says you should do. There's the law. Don't smoke pot because it's against the law. And I think laws are very, very important. And the Bible is very clear that we live in a lawful universe and that we're to obey the laws of this universe and to obey the laws of our land. But just hitting your kids over the head with the law is not going to result in them adopting the values you want them to adopt. We're on the freeway every day, most of us, and when we're in a hurry, even though there's a law that says you should drive 65 or 70, many of us are willing to go over that speed limit a little bit. And that law, in and of itself, does not deter us. And so if in your home you're thinking that just laying out the laws of God, just laying them out there in front of the kids, presenting them to them and saying, thou shalt and thou shalt not, is going to be the key to them adopting the spiritual values you want them to adopt, then I think you're sadly mistaken. You'll acquaint them with the laws, but it doesn't guarantee that they're going to adopt them. Some of us have the idea that fear and threat will teach values. That if I can just show my child all the dangers to this behavior, if I can just show him and threaten him with the possible consequences of some of the sinful acts that I want to teach him about, if I can just show him all of, if I can just scare him a little bit, maybe then, through being afraid of some of these consequences, he'll behave himself. But again, it doesn't work. Just being afraid of something doesn't necessarily deter us from doing that thing. No person ever came to Christ and accepted him simply because he was afraid of hell. If he did, he probably didn't stick around very long. Those of us who have been converted because we saw the love of Christ. We saw his love and his forgiveness. We saw the rewards that he offered to us. There's a scripture I want to give you for that point. Oh, it's down further, so I won't give it to you now. And yet I think when we try to teach our children something about right and wrong, too often we approach it in a negative way. Your child is dabbling in marijuana. How do you approach him on that problem? Most of us spend a tremendous amount of time telling him all the negative things about smoking marijuana. And yet I find that usually young people are not deterred by hearing all the negative things about marijuana. It's not the key. It doesn't seem to work. Our educational programs at school about drugs are failing. They're not working. There's just as many kids that are using that stuff today, if not more, than there were 3 or 4 years ago. And I think the reason they're not working is simply because we're approaching it on the basis of, here's all the negative things, here's the possible dangers, here's the way you're going to hurt yourself. And again, I think it's important to acquaint your young people with the dangers that are connected with some of these behaviors. But if that's the major thrust of your educational program at home, then don't expect them to stick by the values you're teaching them. That's not the key. That's not the key. It won't work. What is the key, then? What is the key? Some years ago, research was done on this area of values in young people. And what they tried to determine was this. What is the key to young people who take the values of their parents and live by them and hang on to them and stick by them, whether with the parents or not? And the first thing they looked at was discipline. They figured maybe this was the key, the approach that the parents took to discipline. They found no correlation between the approach taken to discipline and the way these young people hung on to these values. The next, they looked at Sunday school attendance. Again, they found a very low correlation between Sunday school attendance and holding values. And the correlation they found has to do with what I talked about Monday night. The scripture, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. What they found was this. The way a young person looks at himself defines how he lives out those values. If the young person comes out of your home looking at himself as a negative person, having no value, then you can count on him throwing over your values when he gets out of your home, or even before he's in your home, before he leaves your home. The key is the attitude you are teaching your young people about themselves. And I want to ask you again tonight, like I asked you Monday, what kind of a self-image are you teaching your children? Does the people that live in your home come out of that home feeling worthwhile and valuable as people? Do they have a clear understanding of God's attitude toward them? Do they look at God as a big judge sitting up there in the sky who's ready to zap them dead the moment they sin? Or do they look at God is a person who's very, very much concerned about sin, but more concerned about sinners? And God, a person who has created us and looks at us valuable people and worthwhile people. So if you want to, one of the things you want to do, if you want to have your young people take your values with them for life, is to be sure that you are giving them a healthy attitude toward themselves. And if you give them that, they'll care about their bodies. They won't abuse their bodies. And if you do that, they'll care about other people. And they'll care about you as parents. And they'll care about themselves, too. And the reason they'll care is because they'll know where their value comes from. And they'll know who they are and where they're going. If you want your children to adopt your values, you want to include in your philosophy an emphasis on rewards rather than on danger and threat and fear. Psalm 19, 9 through 11 says God's laws lead to rewards. Following God's laws lead to rewards. Hebrews 11:6, and I'm taking, by the way, I'm using the Living Bible, expecting rewards is a requirement for coming to God. Expecting rewards is a requirement for coming to God. Hebrews 11:6. Your young people will not accept the Lord, will not make him a part of their lives unless they can see the rewards that come from making that commitment. They won't do it out of fear. They have to see the rewards that are connected there. And so when you approach this thing of teaching conduct and values in your home, approach it from a positive stance rather than a negative one. Instead of warning your kids all day long about the dangers of this, that, and the other thing, include in your warnings a statement to the effect that living life in the right way is going to be very, very rewarding. Emphasize the rewards. You have a teenage daughter. You think she may be considering involving herself in premarital sex. The tendency for most parents is to emphasize the danger of disease, the danger of pregnancy, guilt, and all the terrible things that go along with premarital sex. And I think it's important to tell them about that danger. But I think it's more important to communicate to your daughter that sex with one partner for life is the most beautiful kind of experience you can have. That sex suffers from comparison. And that's what you want to emphasize to them. The beauty of having one sexual partner for life. And I think your young people will respond to these positive statements more readily than they will to the negative. Okay. Enough about your philosophy. The third key to teaching these values in the home has to do with your family devotions. A recent survey of teenagers showed that 64%, and this was a random sample of teenagers across the nation, 64% preferred to have the Bible read in their home. They wanted the Bible read in their home. This is teenagers across the board. And so don't ever get the idea that simply because your teenagers seem to be negative toward family devotions, that they really don't want anything to do with that Bible in your home. I don't think that's what they're saying when they're negative. I think they're just saying, you haven't got the key yet. You're not approaching it right, Mom and Dad. And I think if you approach these devotions correctly, most of your teenagers will go along with it and really enjoy it. Not only go along with it, they'll really be involved in it. They'll be motivated by it. But most of us, I think, approach this area of family devotions inappropriately. Family devotions in some of our homes is a disciplinary technique. If we've had a bad day, the kids have been nasty, we say to our wife, you know, these kids have been really bad. We got to have some family devotions here to get them back in shape. Right? That's when you start thinking about it. Gee, we haven't had family devotions for a while. Let's sit down together. Maybe we can get these kids shaped up if we sit down and have family devotions. Family devotions are not to be a disciplinary technique. It's not to be a punishment. And very quickly, your young people get that idea. The times that we have family devotions is when things have been really rough around here. And that's not what family devotions is supposed to be all about. Sometimes family devotions is a bedtime sedative. Kids are jumping and screaming and hollering. It's a beautiful way of settling them down, getting them quiet so they'll go to sleep. Well, again, I don't think that that's the purpose for family devotions, a bedtime sedative. It should be something else than a bedtime sedative. Some of us participate in family devotions out of duty. We hear a sermon at church. We should have family devotions. That's our duty. I don't like it as a parent. I think it's a chore, it's boring, but I'm going to do it because that's what the pastor said we ought to do. And you can't hide that attitude. Your young people will recognize it. And if it's a duty for you, it certainly is going to be a duty for them. Some of us have family devotions as a display of piety. We can prove to you, Dr. Jones, that we have a Christian home because we have family devotions. That's why we have family devotions. To show the world, to show our neighbors, to show our children that we have a Christian home. And you can have family devotions and not have a Christian home. You know that. So if you're having family devotions just to prove to your young people that you have a Christian home, I think it may explain why they're not too interested in getting involved in them. Sometimes we have family devotions as a compensation for failure in other areas. We feel guilty about the kind of parent we are. We feel very badly about the discipline that we have in our home. We feel we're not giving our kids enough attention. We feel our marriage is not a good example to the kids. And so we say to ourselves, we're failing in all these other areas. Let's at least have family devotions. And again, I think if that's the way you're approaching your family devotions, I think your young people are not going to benefit from that devotional time. Family devotions is for one purpose, and that is to meet the spiritual needs of your family and to worship God. That's the only good reason for having them. Your family devotions need to be geared to your family. To your family, to the needs of your family. And that means everything about the devotions ought to be very unique and individualistic. It shouldn't be done the way it was done in your father's home or your parents' home. It shouldn't be done the way it's done in your pastor's home. It shouldn't be done the way Dr. So-and-so says it ought to be done. It ought to be unique for your family. And the uniqueness of it ought to come out of your family. It ought to be something that's created by every family member. It shouldn't be something that's dad's idea and the format is the way dad wants it done, or mom's idea and the way she wants it done. It ought to be something that everyone in your family has a part in creating. How long should they be, for example? And your individual family members may have an opinion about the length of time for your devotions. If you have small children, they probably ought to be fairly brief. And as the kids get older, you can spend more time at them. It ought to be done at a time that's convenient for everyone to participate. Sometimes we just say, we're the parents in this house, and we're going to decide when we're going to have these devotions, and you kids are just going to have to change your schedules around and meet with us and have those devotions then. And I think that is inappropriate and unfair. I think the time ought to be decided by all the family members. And what should the content be? What should the content be? Should the purpose of the family devotion be to teach the kids who was swallowed by a whale? How many books are in the Bible? What's the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament? I think so. I think these are important facts for them to be learning along the way. But more importantly, you ought to be talking with your young people about some of the areas that we've tried to share with you this week. When you have a family devotion, you ought to talk about the value of each person in your family and where that person gets their value. You ought to talk about the roles that each person has in your family. You ought to be talking about the discipline that's going on in your home. You ought to be talking about your family conflicts. You should be open to making your devotional times practical and applied to what's going on in your home right now. You ought to be talking with your young people about prayer and how to pray. Prayer is such a difficult thing to learn, I think. It's very simple to do, and yet it's so hard to learn. And I think it's particularly hard for those of us who have a lot of problems. It's almost as if prayer is a time to share all our negative feelings to God. And I have found that it's a real detriment to solving problems when we spend most of our prayer time sharing with God all our gripes and our negative feelings. And I think that sometimes that's basically what our young people have an idea that prayer is all about. But it's a time to tell God all your problems. And again, that's important. But more importantly, it's a time to thank God for things like the way He made you, for making you the kind of person that you are, for forgiving your sins, for the good things that He's done for you. A time of praise. But again, this is something I think you need to talk over in your family devotions. Instead of just going ahead and praying, you should take those devotional times to consider the whole area of prayer, the purpose of it, and what it means to each of your family members. I indicated to you that family devotion should be something that each family member ought to have a part in. Research in the area of education tells us one thing. When people sit in an audience like this and you talk to them, they will retain about 20% of what you're saying to them. That's about the most they'll retain, about 20%. The moment you get them involved in talking about what you're talking about, the retention jumps to 90%. And that's why we have these small group discussions. We know that just coming and sitting and hearing a speaker will result in you just retaining a very small amount of what you hear. But hopefully, through getting into those small groups and just rethinking and talking about some of the things that are shared, you will retain a lot more. And the same thing holds true in your family devotions. Every time you have a family devotion and you try to present a truth to your young people or to your children, and they are not involved in any way except listening, then you can guess that they've probably retained about 20% of what you shared with them. The moment you involve them, then you're going to get a very high level of retention. And involvement should start at a very young age. At our house, occasionally, family devotions start out by marching around the house, out the back door, around the house, singing Onward Christian Soldiers at the top of our lungs. And I'm sure our neighbors wonder what's going on over there, but we're marching and those kids are involved. And we get back in the house and sit down, and we have no trouble talking with them about spiritual things at that point. They are involved. And the idea came out of them. You know, they, you know, what do you want to do tonight for family devotions? Let's sing Onward Christian Soldiers, and why don't we march? You know, I guess they did it in Sunday school or something like that. And they really enjoyed that. And I think you as parents need to sit down with your young people and ask them, what can we experiment with in this area of family devotions? What can we do differently? And I recommend that you as parents delegate responsibility to each one of them. Say, Tuesday night is Susie's night. Susie's going to lead devotions. And you do it your way, Susie. And go around the family that way. Instead of you as parents always taking the responsibility for leading the devotional time. Be realistic in your expectations. Some nights, your devotions are going to be worthless. They just are not going to work out. Everybody's going to be tired, or the kids won't sit still. Don't let that hang you up. I find that some families get discouraged when they have an experience like that, and they say, I can't go through this. And they give up having the devotions. But you can't expect to have a beautiful, perfect devotional time every time. You're just not going to have that. So expect, at times, to have kind of a unbeneficial time together. But you'll find that if you'll stick with it, more and more you'll have beneficial times. The last thing to think about is your church and your attitude toward church. If you want your young people to believe in the values that you're teaching them, you've got to have a good open communication with them about your church. I hear young people saying today, church is a drag, Sunday school is a drag, I don't like it. Boring. And you know something? I think sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're right. Sometimes their Sunday school class is boring. Sometimes the church services are dry. And you know that. Sometimes you sit in services where it was really boring. And I think when your young people say that to you, instead of saying, oh, don't say that, instead of trying to, don't talk that way about church. Instead of doing that, I think you owe it to them and to yourself to say, sit down and let's talk about it. Tell me how you feel. Let's see what goes on in your classes. And say to them, look, it's important for us to go to church as a family. But listen, anytime you're discouraged or you don't like what's going on in church, let's talk about it together and let's do something about it. Let's go talk to the youth leader. Let's go talk to the pastor. Let's share with him our opinions of the services. And I think you'll find that your young people will be very willing to do that. But if you say, well, don't talk that way about the church, and you're going to go to church anyhow, you're going to just build more and more resistance toward church attendance. So be open in your communication about your church. This church is your church, most of you. And you have a big responsibility to contribute to that church. And I think your leaders in your church would very much want to have your feedback about how you feel about Sunday school and the church services. Be sure you share it with them. Down the hall at my house, there's a bedroom. It's become a classical bedroom because I've been telling about it for a couple of years now. It hasn't changed much. It's a bedroom that needs painting. And my wife has been on my back ever since we moved into that house to paint that bedroom. But it's not painted yet. And the reason it's not painted is because I want to learn some things before I paint it. First of all, I would like to know more about the chemistry of paint. I want to talk to a chemist. I don't want to be painting a room with a substance that I do not fully understand. And so I'm going to talk to a chemist. And after I've talked to a chemist, I'd like to talk to an interior decorator. And I want to get an expert's opinion about color schemes and what goes together and what doesn't go together. Because I don't want to, you know, put the wrong color on the wall, obviously. And then lastly, I want to talk to a professional painter. And I want to be sure that my strokes are right before I begin painting. And I want to probably observe him paint a couple of rooms so I'm sure that I have the technique down. And then, after I've got all that information, I'm going to paint that bedroom. Some of us approach our family life in the same way. We've come to hear Dr. Jones. We hear Dr. So-and-so and Dr. So-and-so, and we're gathering ideas about how to raise our families and how to improve our family lives. And we're reading books. We're going to classes. We're hearing sermons. And we're getting all kinds of ideas. But we haven't done anything about our family life yet. And I would encourage you, if you really want to profit from what you've heard this week, if you want to profit from what you're reading, if you want to profit from some of the other speakers that have really been helpful to you, then I would encourage you to make up your mind that tonight, today, you'll do something different at home. Something. It doesn't have to be something big, but just something different at home. And if you'll begin to experiment and make some changes around there, I promise you, I'd put $1,000 on it, that your family can change. But I also will promise you that just hearing lectures and reading books will never change your family life. You have to take action. And if you'll promise me that you'll go home and do that, I promise you that I'll go home and paint that bedroom. Okay? Promise? Okay. Thank you.